Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 208 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. It's going to be another action-packed one. I know you never hear me say that, but I'm constantly amazed at how much stuff there is always to talk about. Today, we are going to talk about the Supreme Court schedule. I have that schedule with dates and everything, so you'll know what's happening when, and of course, implying the ramifications of all these things as they happen. I have an interesting story about a donor. It's not a huge story. It's just an anecdote, but it's very interesting in the way that it reflects on the national conversation around gun control, around the gun lobby, around licensed gun owners. I just think it's interesting, so I want to share that with you. Also, we'll have an update of the confiscation program, as well as how to instructions on how to withdraw from it. What a slap in the face that is for the government to have people withdrawing from the program that already signed up. Kind of interesting. And of course, Wilson and I are going to talk about the Natalie Provost Big Gary press conference and the train wreck, the absolute exasperated train wreck it became. We haven't seen anything like that actually in a few years here at Canada's gun lobby. What a mess. And also, there's a new study floating around from Dr. Noah Schwartz out of the University of the Fraser Valley on gun control that shows that, well, prohibitions and banning handguns from only licensed gun owners, registered handguns, doesn't have a beneficial effect on crime. Who would have thunk it? But now we've got the science, so you better believe it. And of course, all the information on a couple of rallies that are being organized and hosted by the CCFR, where they're happening, how you can become involved, that kind of thing. Anyway, all that and more, the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. Thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we are back. Now, I've got the Supreme Court schedule here. I'm going to go through this thing for you. Okay, here's the dates. Rapid fire. We've got April 20th. The notice of appeal and notice of constitutional question are due. June the 15th, our appellant materials are due. That's our actual appeal. Our full case is due June the 15th. August 13th, any motions to intervene are due. So any of the interveners that are trying to intervene against or for the CCFR and all the other appellants, they have to have all of their motions to intervene due and to the Supreme Court by August the 13th. So interesting. September the 10th, respondent materials due. So that is the government. The government has had their case into the Supreme Court by September the 10th. September the 24th, our potential reply to the government's case. Now, so September 24th is the last date on there. So here's what I don't know. I don't know whether or not the Supreme Court will expedite this case to meet the deadline of the amnesty. I don't know if they're just going to take all the materials and then render a decision, like just you know, deliberate it in writing. I don't know if we're going to get a hearing out of that. So those are answers I don't have right now. But I think what you should be concerned about is September 24th being the last thing on that list. That's really close to October the 30th. So here's some moving parts. I'm going to rattle off this stuff as fast as I can to make good use of your time. So number one, the government should look at this. Again, I'm not trying to say that they're not adults over there, but you know, a mature approach to this is, we have bumped the deadline for the amnesty for 6 years straight for no good reason other than we couldn't get our act together because, you know, we just couldn't get our act together. Another 6 months for the Supreme Court to be allowed to make a decision on this is probably the prudent thing to do. They shouldn't make us fight for it. That's just wrong because they're not punishing us. They're punishing everyday gun owners, right? And they have a habit of letting this go all the way to the last day or the last 2 days, because what they want to do by doing that, it's not that they can't just scribble down an OIC to extend that amnesty, tell the governor general, hey, stamp this, right? Because it's when you're using an OIC, that's you're actually acting like a king. No kings. Well, it's like, that's it. You're literally having the king stamp your thing, and it bypasses the entire legislative process, man. All the no kings people got to get their heads right and understand what it is they're looking at. But nonetheless, they run it right down to the wire. They ran it right down to the wire every time since this whole thing happened on May 1st, 2020. Just to intimidate, just to terrify gun owners, just so they know who's in charge and how easily that it can be for them to use force against you. Like, this is the game that they've been playing. We've had to seek injunctions against that to get them to stop waiting to the last day, so that guys are like, oh my God, what do I do? Is my door going to get kicked in? There's a lot of people that don't follow politics, and nobody should have to. People should just make the right decisions because they're paid to do that. But anyway, hopefully the government just says, you know what? We're not going to get into a big fight about that. Let's just extend it 6 months. We will request that from the government as well. At the same time, I've already instructed our legal team to pursue a stay of execution from the Supreme Court. Apparently, it's not called an injunction up there. I don't know. What do I know about any of this stuff? And I haven't been through this process before. So we're going to be applying for the Supreme Court to say, yeah, we're going to just hold on to the amnesty, and it's going to apply until we render our decision, plus 30 days for people to comply if we rule against the CCFR or something like that. So hopefully one of those two things will happen, or the Supreme Court might expedite this case. They might say, hey, you know what? Get your stuff in and we'll give you a decision within 2 weeks. We're going to prioritize it. Who knows? They can do whatever they want, apparently. So that's the deal with the Supreme Court. Now, if you've talked to me during the Toronto Sportsman Show or whatever, and I may have mentioned it in the last podcast, if I did, just forgive me, but there's some big things riding on this case. And I think this might be the reason why the Supreme Court is interested in it. And I just want to remind people of this. Is the government had a majority government for 4 years. They won four elections after that with minority governments. The three of those periods involved a supply and whatever agreement, support and supply agreement, I think, or whatever it was, with the NDP. They had a majority. Plus, they got the Bloc and the NDP generally will support them in all kinds of crazy skullduggery that they're involved in. The other parties are just like, yeah, this is awesome. Are we crushing little people? We're in, right? You know. So they've never had a problem passing whatever they wanted. They didn't do it. They used an OIC. Now, an OIC, they are using it to ban billions of dollars worth of personal property. They're using it to affect probably 800,000 Canadians. They use this OIC to decimate the firearm business, family gun stores, people's retirements destroyed, decimated. How many clubs have closed in the last 5 years, last 6 years? There's been more than a few. And these are not small operations. And more will follow. If the Supreme Court rules against us, probably lose another 100 clubs over the next 8 years, right? All of this using an OIC, the king's instrument, like literally the king's instrument. No legislation at all when they had the opportunity for 10 and a half years. Well, not 10 and a half years, to be fair, since 2020, right? So I think the Supreme Court is looking at this going, holy smokes, man, the Liberals may be in power right now and they're using OICs, but at some point there's going to be a conservative government, because there will. Whether it's 15 years from now or 2 years or 4 years or 10 years, at some point people are going to be so sick of it and so broke and have their lives hurt so bad, they're going to be, this has to stop, conservatives. And when that happens, they're going to be like, don't screw around. We are electing you to implement an agenda. We want it done. And the conservatives, if the Supreme Court rules against the CCFR, then the government has said doing all of this stuff with an OIC is completely fine. That's the new way. Forget the no kings thing. It's all kings. Just scrawl it down, tell the governor general to stamp it as if the king stamped it, and you get it back. And it's law. Why would the conservatives go like, forget mandatory minimums, back on the menu. Jailing political opponents because they are guilty of conflict of interest or embezzling money, mandatory jail time, you know, pipelines, well, you name it, whatever their agenda is, just forget the legislative. This too takes too long, and we're not going to be debating these things anymore. And then when someone goes, we're going to take you to court, they're going to be like CCFR versus Canada 2026. Right? I don't know. What do I know, though? I'm not a lawyer. But to me, that's what's at stake. You're setting a precedent. And if the Supreme Court declined to hear this case, that means like the Supreme Court has spoken on it, meaning that the decision of the lower court, in this case, appeals court, the Federal Court of Appeals of Canada, that decision stood, which means that that's completely okay. Billions of dollars of property, hundreds of thousands of people decimating billions of dollars out of the economy, like big stuff. OIC, no problem. Anyway, that's one of the reasons I think that they're interested. And I hope they don't find against us, because that's going to be a big problem. You know, it's always the thing in Canada is the government has huge power. But the other thing is the government has huge power. So the next government gets that same power and can follow that same precedent. And now the Liberals have raised the bar on how governments should use the power that they've always had. Nobody should be surprised when another government uses it as well. You guys made the rules, and we're just going to follow them from now on. So it's just interesting. You know, these elbows up folks, very short-sighted people, I think, in general, what I would say, very short-sighted. So that's a real problem. It's going to become a problem for them, I think. So anyway, wish us the best of luck. All right, a couple of thank yous. I want to thank everyone for taking part in the Raining Guns contest. The contest has done really well for the CCFR. We needed the help, right? We got big plans. We got big things to do. We're going to the Supreme Court. That's not cheap. We've got other legal actions happening, right? They require money. We have the project that I wanted to do that was derailed by the shooting in Tumbler Ridge. Then I pivoted it. I'm like, okay, well, I think there's an election coming in the spring. We're going to start getting ready for that. That's where we'll divert those funds that I allocated for that project to. It's like, oh, floor crossers, no election. They're going to get a majority anyway. It's like, okay, well, we're going to pivot again. So I'm still working on that. But we couldn't do all of these big things and the rallies and you know, having signs, like doing rallies right, like signs and permits and all the rest of that stuff. So everything's done right. And bringing politicians in and speakers and stages and all the rest of that stuff. If people weren't helping us, you guys are all helping us. And we couldn't do it without you. We couldn't have created the CCFR, which is a pretty serious entity. Like we swing a big stick. Like we're still all just a big group of plebs, the common folk, right? But man, we punch above our weight, and it's because of your support and your trust. So I'm always humbled by that, right? I just never want it lost on you how appreciative we are for all your help and allowing me, just a gun owner off the street, some goofball from the mountains, to be able to swing that stick on your behalf. Like it is truly a privilege. So anyway, I just want to thank everybody. One other thing, I want to go through this list. Almost forgot. All of the guns for the Raining Guns contest, all of them were donated. We didn't have to buy any of them. We were prepared to buy some, but we didn't have to buy any of them because there's good people out there that see what we're doing and want to continue to fight right to the last day. So some of those people are Calgary Shooting Center, Wards and Bud Haynes Auction, Sterling Arms, J.R. Cox, he donated the most, unbelievable. Chippewa Trading Post, Canuck Guns, like Odell Engineering, Select Shooting Supplies, General Gun, SFRC, Reliable Gun Vancouver, Jost Arms, Simply Berkey, Justin over there, Medicine Hat, selling filters, man. I got a Berkey as well, by the way. I'm going to have to call Justin. Gagnon Sports, Stan's Plumbing Service. Thank you, Stan. Profit River Firearms, Canadian Access to Firearms, CATF, right? Spectre Ballistics International, also known as Magnus & Sons. YR Firearms Training Company there. I met those guys in the Toronto Sportsman Show. Thank you, guys. And of course, General Counsel to the CCFR, Loberg Ector, donated 10 guns. You know, Loberg Ector has done so much for the CCFR, Mike Loberg, that he would be upset if I told you how much he's done for us. And by extension, done for you guys, for gun owners. I can't tell you. It's unbelievable. So if you need help with a complex commercial litigation or anything else in Alberta or elsewhere, Loberg Ector are your people. This is a smart group of lawyers, and it's not a small group. They're a smart group, and they really care about people who are their clients. I didn't get paid for that. The payment was Loberg Echter supporting the CCFR for 10 and a half years straight. Unbelievable. So thank you to everybody. One last thing about the thank yous to everyone that supported the CCFR and trusted us is I just want to, it's kind of an anecdote. You know, I was at the BC Outdoor Show at Chilliwack Heritage Park a couple of weeks ago. And there was a booth there, and it's a company called Checkers Premium Fudge. So a candy company. And they're like, we love the CCFR. We're going to donate to the CCFR a portion of our proceeds at any outdoor shows that we're doing for the next little while. And I'm like, and honestly, people say that sometimes and it doesn't happen, right? And it's like, okay. I'm like, oh, I appreciate that. I went over and said thank you to them and for their support. And it's just, oh, a candy company? Filter, guy sells filters, plumbing companies, right? And this is going to be about my comment in a second, but you know, and Checkers just sent us a check for $240 or something. I'm like, man, you guys, like, I just really appreciate the help. And the anecdote part of it is, it's just interesting to me. Businesses outside of firearms are like, yeah, we support the CCFR. Like, you should all be proud of yourselves out there, but at what we've all built together. All right, that's it for me. Let's bring Tracy on and I'll get back to you. All right, we are back, and via the internet, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Wilson!
Wilson! I heard that a lot at TSS.
Yeah. Well, we hear it a lot pretty much everywhere we go.
Yeah, like the grocery store, Costco, you know, the gas station, yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing, like apparently.
It's a thing now, yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, we've got tons of stuff to cover, you know, every time. I've said this, I don't know, probably 60 times in the intro to the podcast and the TV shows, mm-hmm. where I'm like, I can't believe there's so much to talk about, because I always thought that we would end up, you know, nothing would be happening anymore. Everything would be over one way or the other and nobody would have a reason to watch. So I guess it's good. We've got tons of stuff to cover. So we got to get at it.
Yeah. Okay.
So the assault style firearm compensation program, also known as the confiscation program, is still going. I don't know about if I'd say it's going strong, but it's still going. So why don't you give us a quick little update on kind of the numbers, and also whether or not it might be a good idea, if you've registered for that program, to withdraw, and if so, how to do it.
Okay. Well, you're right. At time of recording, today is the final day, March 31st, 2026. So it's the final day of this nightmare of a gun grab program. So yeah, you've got a couple choices. Those of us who have sort of held out and held the line, we are going to await the eventual outcome of that Supreme Court case, right? That's the hope right now. But I get it. A lot of people got these emails. Well, we all got them from the government. They were scary, threatening things like charges or possible suspension of your firearms license. Like, there's been a lot of conversation, and I know my phone, your phone, everybody's phone has been very busy with people worried about this. But I have good news. Two things. You're protected by the amnesty, just like the rest of us, right up until the end of October. That will hopefully get, that amnesty will get extended through an injunction through the court process. But either way, you have protection. You are not obligated to participate in this program. So for those who did, I get it. Like, there was a lot of pressure put on you. And especially even today, I would imagine some people maybe thought, well, it's the last day, you know, let me just sneak in there and see if I can get something. The good news is it's not too late to withdraw. And the way to do that is super easy. The instructions are all on ccfr.ca, but we're going to go over them real quickly right now. There's two different ways to withdraw, and we get this information from the government. They provide the withdrawal instructions under the terms and conditions of the buyback program. And you can withdraw your consent from this program anytime, right up until your firearms are collected. Of course, once your guns are gone, they're gone. So my suggestion is to do this sooner rather than later. The two different ways are, number one, contact the program's contact center at this number. Pause the video. Bing. There you go. That's the phone number. So you can call 1-833-759-4551 and just tell them, look, I have filled out a declaration for my firearms and I wish to withdraw it. That's it. I'm out of the program. I don't want to do it. And that's the end of it. I read some commentary today from some people who did it. The other way is just to wait until they contact you, because of course, the next step will be the confiscation and collection of your firearms. And they're either going to call you for an appointment to come down to the police station and turn those firearms in, or they're going to attend your home and pick them up. Either way, when they call you for that appointment, you just say, you know what? It's not a compulsory program, and I withdraw. I'm not going to participate. Sorry for the inconvenience. Goodbye. We're done here. Hang up the phone. You're done. That's it. You're not obligated to participate, even if you filled out the declaration. So that's good news. I would love to see those numbers. And I think today at a press conference in Wakefield, Quebec, the Prime Minister said they were somewhere around 57,000. So they're very slow trickle of declarations going in. But yeah, I'd love to see that number shrink back the other way. That would be perfect.
Well,
I hope it fails.
If I were to move around the order a little bit, since you brought it up, we were going to talk about today's press conference. We're going to talk about it in contrast to the completely unhinged and humiliating press conference that Big Gary and Natalie Provost had a few days ago. But in today's press conference, they talked about the 57,000 number, 57,000 firearms being declared. And, you know, that's interesting in that Carney wouldn't comment on whether he was pleased with that number or he thought that was an accomplishment or what have you. Remember, the original number of firearms that were supposed to be bought back, as it were, quote unquote, was 152,000. That got revised down to 136. And so half of if they registered half of those, that would have been 68,000. So not even half. So I will say that's pretty amazing to me. Like that is rejected by even the people that have ARs that are registered.
That's right.
They're even and I mean, I would imagine if I were to try to guess, I'd say that some large amount of that 57,000 were people with ARs because they're like, they know I got them. You know, and
doesn't matter. You're still protected by the amnesty, though.
Yeah, of course. But it's what a failure. Like, I'm even surprised.
Yeah. Well, that's why withdrawal, like even now, by the time this airs out, you know, the program will probably be closed. Even now, it's not too late to withdraw. And that's really important because it would be wonderful to see those numbers go backwards. And of course, we'll be filing ATIPs on all this because, you know, I don't always trust what they say in press conferences. And yeah, I want that information. I want the number of declarations that were withdrawn. Excuse me. I think that'll be really interesting information. So yeah, the phone number is right here. Pause the video and you can call them right now and cancel your declaration.
Awesome. Possum. All right. Well, let's get on to some fun. So the press conference we were talking about, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
No,
you have the Secretary of Nature I think other than what you said today, I don't think I've ever seen Natalie Provost do a press conference on anything to do with nature, or I never heard of her being involved in any project at all. Like I've never heard anything about her portfolio.
Yeah. Today in Wakefield, there was an announcement related to the protection of land and waters. And you're right. That's the first time I've seen her actually work on her file.
Yeah. I think she probably, so there's a couple of things. We're going to get into this press conference because it is actually quite interesting. She said some crazy stuff, obviously not overly surprising, but I mean, it was unhinged. But in contrast, so I guess the first thing is she spoke when she wanted. She literally pushed Big Gary, a sitting minister, out of the way so that she could answer a question.
Oh yeah, she did.
But then today when she was with Carney, she was standing silent with her hands folded and it was like, no, I will be no more trouble. So somebody got a talking to. I don't know if it seems like it worked, but.
Well, I was saying when that first press conference happened, the unhinged one, I said like, it was actually shocking to me how undisciplined they were. You know, I think Carney was traveling around at that point doing something else, but it was shocking to me that he would allow his cabinet to act this way, right? And then here we have the contrast to today, where she's literally just standing behind him, very, you know, meek and quiet and hands folded and lips closed. And yeah, just a very stark contrast. But yeah, it was interesting. I think for me, the wildest thing she said in that unhinged press conference, you know, she was blaming us for the low uptake, you know, not the fact that gun owners don't want their stuff taken or that they don't trust the government or whatever. You know, everything is always our fault, right? But she said, all views that are critics to the program answer to the gun lobby. That's for sure.
Today, what is really important, and all views that are critics to the program answer to the gun lobby. That's for sure. We hear it in Quebec, and I am sure it's all across Canada.
And that's interesting because that was in response to a question from a reporter asking about all the law enforcement agencies who have declined to participate, refused to participate in this confiscation gun grab. And she's blaming us, like as if somehow we have some, you know, some force over law enforcement agencies or police chiefs. Like, I don't know, just super frustrating, you know, dysfunctional beyond belief.
Or provinces or territories or CFO's offices within provinces. Like it, like, you know, I think one of the things that's triggering about this whole thing is that throughout the whole press conference, she's pleading with the mainstream media in Canada that is subsidized by the government to the tune of probably $1 billion so far since Trudeau was in power. And she's pleading for help. Like these, and I'm talking about the mainstream media in Canada right now, these people do nothing but help you.
Yeah.
Like they help day in, day out. Like we, for example, we're gonna talk about a CBC piece. And that was probably one of the most balanced pieces on this buyback program I've ever seen from CBC. And but at the same time, they're always up to their old tricks, helping them, helping the government by putting Joe Gun Owner on there, which was Adriel, the hunting gear guy, I think is the name of his channel, who did a great job. But then they just juxtapose him to the anti-gun lobby, right? People that talk about this stuff for a living. And so CBC does that all the time. They'll call us looking for like your average gun owner that got, oddly enough, I didn't plan to talk about this, but the CBC called or emailed us one time for somebody for Rosie Barton's show. And they're like, we want an average gun owner. We don't want the gun lobby to speak on behalf of gun owners. It's like, well, that's weird.
Of course not.
I said, but you're in luck. I forget his name, but he's like, we want someone who's lost guns in this confiscation or in the prohibitions. I said, well, you're in luck. I've lost $30,000 worth. Okay, well, but we didn't want the gun lobby. We wanted like an average guy. I'm like, I'm just an average license holder here in Canada and an instructor for the RCMP Canadian Firearms Program. Like I'm probably the right person. Okay, let's get back to you. No, they find a gun owner that owns a gun shop in Alberta. They put him up. And who on the other side? Well, it's a government minister from the Liberals. I forget which one it is. It was somebody that just kind of was sitting temporarily in one of the portfolios. But yeah. Professional politician on the other side, like they're always got their finger on the scale. And here's Natalie, like, please help us stop this disinformation.
While she was begging them not to platform us, not to interview us or hear from stakeholders, the only people affected by the gun grab.
Yeah.
Like crazy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's just wild. So she was also here's some of my favorite hits from that, well, I mean, it was such a ridiculous thing. So she's ranting and raving about disinformation. Help us fight the disinformation. She was actually asking the media to push disinformation is what she was doing, because she's like, well, there's no, you know, she was criticizing Pierre Poilievre.
How are you connecting to legal gun owners and trying to get them to participate in this program if you keep saying it's the gun lobby, it's conservatives, these are people who own these guns? How's your government connecting with them?
We're writing to them directly, but the gun lobby, the website, the system of gun hunters are going over that. And we are in a society where people do not listen at you, but listen at the gun lobby before listening at the news. So please help us, cite us in their website so they'll know that it's not more than what's already decided in 2020, 2024, and 2025, and that's it, and they can register. Please help us and stop that disinformation. And I'm also saying to my colleagues, the conservative, stop saying it. When someone who would like to be a prime minister is saying something, and I quote, confiscating hunting rifles and pop can guns. That's not what we're talking about when we're talking about an AR-15. So thank you.
Thank you.
And it's like, well, the GSG-16, what do you call that? Yeah. What do you call the Ruger number one? It's a single shot break action rifle. That's a hunting rifle. What do you call all of the other 22s that they banned? What do you call all of the shotguns that they banned? The magazine fed shotguns. Like, what do you call all of those?
Pop gun.
Yeah.
Pop gun,
oh, the double barrel rifles guns that are worth $110,000 that are on the list at 110 grand. Double barrel rifle. You know, and then she's screaming about disinformation. Very interesting. Wagging her finger at the media.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I don't want to be mean about this, but like she's completely delusional.
Yeah.
And it's actually a little bit sad to watch because she, as we've said before, you and I both said, like, she is a legitimate victim.
Yes, she is.
Like, legit victim. Like, I get it. And I can't imagine what she's been through. And I don't want to fight with her, you know? But being a victim of a crime doesn't mean you can use government force to enforce your bad ideas on hundreds of thousands of people and not get any pushback for it. I don't know if that's
right.
I think that's a pretty reasonable thing to say, no?
I think so too.
So yeah, anyway,
absolutely.
For God's sakes, man. Speaking of unhinged, you've got whoever runs Pauly Sessivien's Twitter account, X account, coming out with this ridiculous tweet. I guess they actually had gone back and forth with someone or whatever. I didn't read the thread because I just don't care enough. However, the point of contention was how many newly prohibited firearms were previously non-restricted in Canada. How many guns were actually affected by this prohibition and thus qualified for the buyback? And I did my own little, you know, research project, and it only comes down to common sense. There's well over 2 million.
Yes.
And the reason for that is, and if you guys remember, sorry for capitalizing on the conversation for a second, but if you guys remember, I said, just look at the GSG-16. It was sold at Cabela's. It was sold at every gun store in Canada. They were very popular. They were inexpensive. They were cool looking. They're fun. It's just a 22, cheap to shoot. They were extremely popular. Like, I own two of those things, like one guy. And so you can imagine, like, how many are across Canada? It's like, I'm sure there's 40, 50, 60,000 of them.
Oh, at least. Yeah.
That is the same total number of all of the assault style firearms declared in the entire program.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if that's true, can you imagine? There could be 4 million of these guns. And here's the one thing I really want to hammer home is that Global Affairs Canada knows. Mm-hmm. And I said that probably before. Global Affairs Canada has kept a record of every firearm that has been imported into Canada since 2002. The government either was too incompetent to go and ask Global Affairs, I need a number so I can plan this buyback. They've spent whatever, hundreds of millions of dollars on this buyback program, and they don't know how many guns have come into the country since Global Affairs have been keeping records 24 years ago. Like, that's not a thing.
Oh, they know.
They totally know. But they don't want to tell you because of the epic failure this would look like if they really disclosed the figure. So
that's right.
But Pauly, who are the biggest spreaders of misinformation, well, disinformation, they know it, right? Same thing with that whole thing with the amendments, G46 and the big list. And they're like, oh no, when we say the Ruger number one is prohibited, it only applies to the ones that, you know, have the discharge more than 10,000 joules of muzzle energy. And it's like, well, no, that's not how it's written. And they're like, oh, this is disinformation. Well, they're like, they reject the number. They're like, oh, this is a good number, 136,000.
They have to go along with it, though. They have to.
Well, yeah, they have to. And that's I think that's the
They know it's not, they know that's not an accurate number, too. And it's all theater, but they're going to go along with it because otherwise they would have to admit that you know, exactly, the epic failure of this, you know, collecting 50, 60,000 declarations out of 130,000. Well, you know, it's not good, but it's not terrible. But out of 2 million, like, or 4 million, like, come on. That's why they're just going to go with it.
But that's the Canadian politics thing. That's what people are so sick of. It's like, well, this, you know, I will lie through my teeth. And then on top of that, I will call the people telling the truth. I'll call them liars because politics, because this is how we do it in Canada. This is now the Canadian identity. You know, you're not seeing what you're seeing. You're obviously an ist or a phobe if you're seeing what you're seeing. Like, it's just interesting. So they tweet out when someone says, hey, you know, the CCFR and Global News had floated this number. And they're like, that's very funny. Of course, we don't trust the gun lobby's made up statistics.
Okay. So defile an ATIP with GAC. Go ahead. I dare them.
Yeah. So
file an ATIP. Find out what the real number is.
What a mess these people are, man.
Yeah.
What a mess. And you wonder why everyone's so frustrated, right? Like, just be honest. Like, it's really not that hard.
Well, there was something the other day where Heidi had said she wanted the SKS banned, or at least the future sales of them stopped, because future models of SKS could be still manufactured. Well, they haven't manufactured an SKS in decades. Like, what? I don't know. This is a problem when you have people that don't know anything about guns thinking that they know stuff about guns, right?
Well, I think that's a very common, that's a common condition for Canadians in the last 12 years, right?
That's true.
I don't know anything about anything, but I am convinced that I'm right.
Yeah. Interview me.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on, we were going to talk about Gary in committee, but there wasn't a lot there other than I think he was talking about who's going to actually collect those guns. Do you have any information about that?
Yeah, that was actually the only interesting part of that was he was talking about Dane Lloyd actually hammered him. It was wonderful. Dane does such a good job. But Dane Lloyd was hammering him about, okay, then what happens after the buyback program's over? And what happens after the amnesty's over? Are you sending cops door to door? And he very clearly said no, but he said they were going to use these mobile collection units and, of course, use RCMP reservists. So RCMP reservists would be very similar to like an army reservist, right? It's not a full-time person. It could be somebody who's retired or whatever, but there's actually so few of them and the average age of an RCMP reservist is 72. So I don't know. It could be the, Gunny Grandpa program where they're sending grandpas around to try and pick your firearms up. So what a mess.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to a podcast of a few people who will remain nameless for now, but it's a Canadian kind of firearm oriented podcast yesterday. And there was a little bit of information there. I am sympathetic to people. There are a lot of dates floating around. There are a lot of moving parts with our Supreme Court challenge and what the government said and all the false starts. And then you've got the program, but it's not mandatory, it's voluntary. But then there's the mandatory ending of the amnesty and all the rest of that stuff. Like, I know it's very confusing, but something that was said there was, when police, they're going to use reservists and whatever to go door to door. And it's like, that's not really what they're doing, because then it broke into this whole thing. It's like, well, when someone's not giving up their guns, they're not sending a general duty member there or a reservist. They send ERT, right? SWAT.
Right.
And it's like, there's a difference between the cops going to someone who hasn't surrendered firearms and the amnesty is over than someone who hasn't participated in the buyback program.
Right.
If you participate in the buyback program and they get to the point where they're like, okay, we're sending someone to collect your guns, this is a voluntary exchange. This is not someone saying, come and get it, I'll give you the ammo first, right? Like, that's not what's going on there. They're like, hey, I want the money. I sent you all the information on my guns. Just come and collect them. That's what they're sending the reservists to do.
Exactly.
If it's past October, you have AR-15s, like registered now prohibs, and you're like, come and get them, that's different.
Yeah, you're probably going to find yourself in a terrible situation.
Yeah, but just because some people are saying that this is like, how they're, you know, that this is the scenario that's going to happen when they collect the guns that you've registered that you want to give to the government.
Right.
So anyway, just it's really, I think it's important that everybody understands that, right?
Yeah, it totally is.
Nobody's going, quote, door to door during the compensation confiscation program. That's later when you're like, I'm not giving up the guns. Then it starts getting serious.
Yeah, might get spicy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So more decisions for people to make, I guess. All right. Our great friend, Dr. Noah Schwartz from the University of the Fraser Valley had done a study. It's very, very long, a lot of data and whatnot, but you have the kind of the short strokes of that, don't you?
Yeah, I do have the too long didn't read. So this is a new study with the McDonald Laurier Institute. And there's a scientific way that they can evaluate firearm policy, and they call it the firearm policy evaluation framework. So the too long didn't read is using the firearm policy evaluation framework. Our study provides a rigorous assessment of these policy shifts. And they're talking about, the gun ban, the handgun stuff, everything that's happened to us. Drawing on a deep dive into the literature on gun control policy, as well as interviews with law enforcement, community workers, and stakeholders, we found that these are the three conclusions. Number one, there's no evidence to support a prohibition or confiscation buyback of assault-style weapons in the Canadian context. Number two, there's no evidence to support a freeze on the legal sale of handguns to licensed owners. And thirdly, police are concerned with smuggled firearms from the United States and privately manufactured firearms, PMFs, not legal gun owners. Shocking. Cops want to do cop stuff and stop crime, and gun grabs don't work. So, yeah, it's funny that, somebody very famously said, you know, the evidence is in and it's incontrovertible. And yeah, here we are. The science is clear and overwhelming.
Yeah, well, you follow the science when the government agrees with it. Yeah. And the rest of the time, it's, of course, you don't trust the gun lobby's made up statistics, I think is a quote.
Yeah, maybe Dr. Schwartz is also under the control of the gun lobby.
Yeah, we're running him, apparently. We're running Gary and Nanda Sangari and running all the police and all the provinces and all the CFOs. That's how big we are.
And just all the normies who are sick and tired of this stupid gun ban.
And all of the Conservative Party of Canada are all in our pocket.
Yes, of course they are.
Like, you know,
we're so powerful.
Well, I'm like, I don't know, should I call people delusional or whatever? Right? I'm like, maybe I should rein in a little bit. It's like, that's total delusion, right?
Yeah. Just
for these people to say, you know, someone who is in a ministerial post, like Natalie's not a minister, but she's paid like one.
She's in cabinet. She's the Secretary of State.
Yeah. Yeah. And for her to say that kind of delusional crap, same thing with Mendocino used to say all kinds of stuff. Bill Blair, like all these guys, right?
Notice Justin they're Trudeau, all gone.
Like they've made politics so unserious. And I'll tell you something that is absolutely true. The CCFR, over the last 10 and a half years, for its entirety of its existence, has never given $1 to any politician at all for an election campaign or donation. Not a dollar, nothing, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think you gave somebody a $60 pistol case and a t-shirt once.
Yeah, for a birthday. And it was like, you know, I ended up in front of the lobby commission.
Yeah.
For it.
And they were on us immediately. And people were like, look. I mean, agree.
Imagine buying a politician with a t-shirt and a $60 plastic.
Yeah.
You know, right? Pistol box. Okay.
Arrive scam, green slush fund, the Bayless, whatever it was about. What was it? Oh, the ventilators at $10,000. Like just like billions of dollars getting floated out there. The satellite internet company or something that's friends of Carney's getting billions of dollars. Like we're going to compete with Elon Musk. Like just, it's like
two guys in the basement cottage. Like there's just so many scams.
Yeah. Like the gun lobby gave a $60 gun case to somebody. See, CPC is completely captured. Did I bring up the word delusional?
Yeah.
All right. We're getting down to the bottom of the list here. CBC did this piece. and Adriel, the hunting gear guy, was in it, did a great job.
He sure did.
But of course, yeah, they put regular gun owner, although Adriel is a little more exceptional than your regular gun owner.
I would say so.
But absolutely is. He knows what he's talking about. And then on the other side, it's like, oh, here comes the anti-gun lobby. It's like us, nowhere near. The biggest gun lobby in the history of the country. Like, nope. We're representing hundreds of thousands. Nope. We don't need any commentary from those people. And you got an anti-gun group that has gotten some money for government, I think. But other than that, like, they're opaque. Yeah,
36 years of media experience, right? Yeah,
and right, nobody knows where they're getting any money or whether it's all volunteer. Like, nobody knows anything about them.
No, of course not.
You know, just, I don't know, very interesting. I will say the CBC piece was probably among the most balanced I've ever seen from them. But funny, they couldn't resist that one trick of like, okay, we're just going to get who at least we think is a regular gun owner and then pit them against the professionals. Mm-hmm. They couldn't resist that. That's one of their oldest tricks. And then they couldn't resist showing Adriel shooting a full auto, probably at SHOT Show or something.
They probably got it off of social media.
They got to have some full auto in there so that they can deceive Canadians into thinking these are the guns that are being banned.
Of course.
Like, it's pretty sickening, to be honest with you. Like, the dishonesty, right? But
yeah,
anyway.
It is, but that's our battle space, right?
Yeah. So good work, CBC, mm-hmm, on doing 80% of what you should have done.
Almost did it.
Yeah, you almost were credible. You were so close for a second there.
All right. High five, almost.
Yeah. And last but not least, the CCFR is putting together a couple of big rallies, and we're hoping everyone will show up. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. We've got two of them coming up here in April. And of course, I keep saying we got to get out to Winterpeg, and we will, I promise. But Friday, April 10th, you can find us in Halifax at the Halifax Grand Parade, right in front of Halifax City Hall from 4 to 7. These are not long events. You're not going to be out there all day long, you know, working the picket line. It's not that kind of deal. Come out for a couple of hours, have our say, make a big show. The media covers it. It's very good. SCI Canada is kind of partnering with us on it, which is fantastic. MP Blaine Calkins will be there. And then Friday, this is one that's local in Ontario, so I want a big showing. Friday, April 24th at 2026, same time, 4 to 7, we're going to Waterloo Region. We're going to be gathering at Cambridge City Hall on Dixon Street. And we've got MPs Connie Cody, Matt Strauss, Kelly DeRitter, Blaine Calkins. And I just want to say one final thing on this. So we've been doing these rallies all over, all the way from, you know, the Cape Breton pilot program to Charlottetown to New Brunswick. We've been everywhere, and Quebec City. And Quebec takes a lot of ribbing from other gun owners and just people in general. And, you know, I will tell you that at the Quebec rally, they put estimates are from 3,000 to 4,000 people on the ground at that rally. It was huge. So, you know, when people say, that Quebec wants this program, let them have it. Quebec does not want this program. And they've showed up every other region in the country by putting so many people on the ground. So this is my challenge to all of you. Come see me in Halifax, April 10th, in Waterloo Region, April 24th. Let's see what we can do with these. Let's blow it out and show huge opposition to this government's gun grabs and every jurisdiction that signs a deal with the feds. So that's how we're choosing the places. A lot of people are asking me, can we do one in my town? We are choosing jurisdictions that sign a deal with the feds to help with the confiscation programs. So I anticipate that work will continue because now they have closed their portal after today. So we'll see. They'll need somebody to pick them up. So we may have a very busy summer ahead of us with rallies. But yeah, stay tuned. You can find all of these at ccfr.ca/events.
Awesome. Possum.
Yes.
All right. Well, yeah, we got to keep the pressure on. Every time there's a big rally and a little bit of media shows up there, that's important work. And then it gives you an opportunity, Tracy, because you're going to be there. Those ones are in the East, well, Central Canada, you know, gives you an opportunity to do a little bit of talking, get some access. It's really important work because the more people that see this and see it as such a failure and hear our side of the story, you know, the better off we are. So, and we've come a long way. Like, there's not a lot of appetite for this across the country. The Liberals know that. They just are too afraid because they already dug their heels in.
It's very unifying for gun owners who show up too. You know, sometimes maybe you feel a little bit alone, or, you know, you're frustrated with the way things have been going for 10 years. Bro, I get you. Like, everybody there is in the same boat as you. So yeah, it's a great place to connect with other like-minded people and band together. And to me, I would rather raise hell all the way to the end of this than to go silently into the night. I'm not doing that. So, yeah.
Inspiring words, Ms. Wilson.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Like raising hell.
All right, we covered our list. I guess we will. Thanks for the update, and we'll see you next time.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 208 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Make sure to share the podcast, all the things that I normally say. I only have two things I need to go over with you before I let you go. Number one is the most important, which is CCFR Field Officer of the Month for March 2026, and that is our great friend Derek Gowland. Congratulations, Derek. Derek's fairly new, I think, in the CCFR, in the Field Officer Program, and he's been lighting the world on fire, man. He's putting a tremendous amount of time and effort in. And I tell you, I got a chance to meet and hang out with Derek a couple of weeks ago at Toronto Sportsman Show, and a lot of our best field officer team were there. And I, you know, man, it never wears off for me. Like, I just, sometimes I just stand there, I look around at all the people that have come together to create what we created at the CCFR, to create this organization. You know, as I say, like the one big group, we always like, these are the people that did it. And it just never wears off. I'm just like, man, these people, this is all their own time. And I just have such tremendous respect and I'm so grateful for that. So anyway, really appreciate it. In case Derek doesn't know, because I think this is the first time he's ever won Field Officer of the Month, what you get a $100 promo code to the CCFR online stores, get yourself some merch. You get a year's free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms that's donated by one of the best people around, Donovan Dewis, every month. Really appreciate that. You get mentioned here on the podcast and on our nationally broadcast television show, CCFR Radio on the Air on Wild TV. So thanks again, Derek, for all your work. Really appreciate it. And the other thing I wanted to mention is the CCFR AGM annual general meeting is happening on May the 23rd in Mississauga, Ontario. If you're in the area, man, come and party with us. I'm going to be there. Wilson's going to be there. The whole CCFR crew, field officers, supporters. We got some great speakers. Sheila Gunn-Reed, Randall Arsenault, police officer with the Toronto Police Service for many years, liaison officer, YouTuber, great guy. And of course, Tracy and I are going to do an Ask Me Anything. We're going to sit there live on the stage and anybody can ask us anything. We'll answer the questions. Pretty cool. So anyway, don't miss your opportunity. Go to ccfr.ca right now to get tickets for the AGM. It's not an expensive night out. Dinner's going to be beautiful. You're going to have a great time. So make sure you come out and hang out with us as well. Don't forget the It's Raining Guns contest is going to be ending in less than a month. So if you're interested, go to ccfr.ca to do that. If you want to consider becoming a member, please do. You can find that at ccfr.ca as well. Thanks for your help. Thanks for your support. Thanks for everything, everyone. Really appreciate it. Okay, take care, and we'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.